Good morning. Over the past few months, I've been doing a series of sermons in John's Gospel. But because of the current situation with so many people being afraid of death, I've decided to preach a sermon from the book of Hebrews, and I've given it the title, Being Delivered from the Fear of Death. Last month, an NHS respiratory consultant working across several hospitals wrote an article in the Guardian newspaper. In it, he, or it could be she, said, "We doctors are scared of the coronavirus. How could we not be? Nearly everybody admits to being scared, except for those who claim that all we need to do is to use chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine. Social media is rife with questions about COVID-19. Is it prophesied in the Bible? Is it a Chinese biological weapon? How could a God of love possibly permit it?" Seeking to argue the relative merits of the first two questions brings little comfort to the people who are going through the trauma of losing a loved ones, members or friends. But the third question does merit some consideration. Many Bible teachers have sought before me to address the question as to why a God of love should permit it. Last week, Terry Boyle mentioned those who accuse God of being responsible for it, but he showed that it's not God who's responsible, but someone else. I'm not a renowned scholar, and I don't often speak in front of a video camera. But I'd like to just look at one passage in the New Testament, which speaks about being delivered from the fear of death. Let's face it, we're all going to die one day, some sooner, some later. Today, it's the scale of this pandemic that has struck fear into the hearts of so many and brought the truth of the reality of death to the forefront of our thinking. Speaking about Jesus, the writer of the letter to the Hebrews penned these words: "Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity, so that by his death he might break the power of him who holds the power of death, that is, the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. For surely it's not angels he helps, but Abraham's descendants. For this reason, he had to be made like them, fully human in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in the service to God, and that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. Because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted." First of all, then, deliverance is necessary. Like it or not, people are scared of death. And these verses speak about us being slaves to the fear of death. Nobody likes to be reminded of the fact they're going to die. People have invented all sorts of stratagems to escape the fear of death. Back in the 1960s, Tim Leary, who experimented with psychedelic drugs, was fired from the Harvard University and led a tumultuous life, finding himself in prison in the very next cell to Charles Manson. Leary was diagnosed with inoperable cancer in 1995 and died a year later, having arranged for a film to be made about his death. According to his family, he died asking why, or why not? And one testimony speaks of him being absolutely terrified. But not everybody's like Tim Leary. The anxiety of death is at the heart of many mental health disorders, even though, as many people think, those who've already died have already gone up to heaven and are somewhere up there looking down on us. That's an idea that's been popularized by shows like Friends, Simpsons, Futurama. But the fear doesn't go away, does it? Why not? What are we afraid of? Could I suggest that we're afraid of accountability? If God exists, and if we have to give an account of our lives to him, we're afraid that we're going to come up short. That's why this theory of evolution is so popular today. Why so many people refuse to countenance the possibility of there being intelligent design, despite the overwhelming evidence of the existence of a creator God. All around us, we're told that we can all live lives as we please, without any consequences. But that's wrong, and deep down we know that it is. Today we're encouraged to make the right choices, to buckle up because we know it makes sense, or to think before texting. And those slogans are put alongside another one, think bike. But they're not the same. The first two are laws of the country. And if you break the law, then you get a fine and you get points taken off your license. So there is a difference between right and wrong and just advice. We all have a moral compass. We all know that lying, cheating, stealing, domestic violence and killing are wrong. And we're up in arms about the increase in domestic violence during this lockdown period. And when we see people seemingly getting away with it, we're furious. And yet in certain cases, we'd be happy if we could get away with it. If we could get away with a little bit of speeding or telling a white lie. We're far from perfect, and we're locked into a body where we can't help ourselves. In other words, we're slaves, and we need to be set free. But then deliverance has been accomplished. In that passage that I read, we read, since the children have flesh and blood, the term children referring back to a previous verse where it refers to believers in Jesus, these people were normal human beings. And we read that Jesus too shared in their humanity, shares in our humanity. The Son of God, Jesus, didn't come into existence when he was born in Bethlehem. He existed long before creation even. And since the children whom he loved and wanted to save were human, he too became human in order to save them. The next part of the verse says that he came to die. We read, so that by his death, in his divine nature as eternal God, he couldn't die. But a sacrifice was necessary to deal with the guilt and punishment of sin. So he became a human being so that he could die as a perfect sacrifice for us who aren't perfect. That is how great God's love is for us, being willing to suffer and die so that we might be delivered. And the last part of the verse teaches us that he rendered powerless the one who has the power of death, the devil. Many people think that the devil is an invention of the church, designed to frighten people into obedience. But the Bible speaks about him from the very outset, and he figures in many of the world's religions, not just in Christianity. Our text tells us that in dying, Jesus defeated the power of the devil, took away his ability to destroy us by death. And in verse 17, he tells us that he did this by being fully human in every way, in order that he might make atonement for the sins of his people. When he died, it looked as if the devil had won. It looked as if evil had triumphed over good. But Jesus rose again from the dead. Resurrection that we celebrated last weekend. He turned the tables. He was victorious over death and the devil. And we read too that he came to free all those whose lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. That means that we can be freed from the haunting world of denial, distraction, and escape. We can face death and not be afraid. It may seem today that things are spiraling out of control, that we're all facing this invisible enemy of the coronavirus, and we're told that we can beat it if we all work together. But we can't. We're told at the same time that COVID-19 can touch people of all ages, ethnic backgrounds, walks of life, rich and poor, old and young, men and women. All are concerned by the virus. And until we find a solution to it, until we find a cure, we're all going to be concerned by it, the same as we're all concerned by sin. It's not we who will beat it, but God will beat it. It may appear that things are out of control, but that isn't true. When Pontius Pilate challenged Jesus, saying to him, "Don't you realize I have power either to free you or to crucify you?" Jesus replied that he wouldn't have any power at all unless it was given him from above. In the Bible studies that I'm currently giving in the book of Revelation, there's a little word which means power was given to them. It's applied to the four horsemen of the apocalypse in chapter 6 and to the angels in chapter 9. Power is given to them. And when we put our trust in Jesus, then he is the one who takes charge. It's not chance, it's not the devil, it's not karma, it's not our past or anything else. When I was preparing this message, I read of one Baptist minister who, before entering the ministry, used to be a postman. One day, when delivering letters, he opened a garden gate only to be confronted by an enormous vicious dog which barked furiously at him and leapt towards him. He stood there quaking until he realized that the dog was chained to a post set in concrete. The chain was long, the dog vicious, but it couldn't reach him, and he could deliver the letters without fear. So we too can be delivered from that slavery. And the deliverance continues, because though the conquest of sin, death, and the devil took place once and for all in history, it's only valid for us if we apply it to our lives day by day. We read, "Because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted." Fear paralyzes us. It stops us from living the life to the full. Before Christ comes into our lives, as I've said, our greatest fear is death. Modern psychology is full of tips about overcoming our fears. Focus on the present, we're told. Another, don't imagine the worst. If you imagine the worst and it happens, you've lived it twice. Some people talk about fight or flight. But the Apostle John writes this: "There is no fear in love. Perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love." God understands that we don't have to strive for perfection because of his love. How wonderful it is to have a heavenly Father who loves us so much that he won't give up on us. His love is unfailing. It always perseveres. His love pursues us and never grows tired of our imperfections and flaws. And God is merciful. He became like us in order to meet our needs as a merciful and faithful high priest. We don't need to fear death, worry about the future, nor the guilt of the past. Because of Jesus' death and resurrection, our debt has been paid. The slate has been wiped clean. We owe nothing. Nothing is quite so debilitating and demoralizing as a sense of failure. When we feel that we don't belong, when we feel rejected, how wonderful to know that Jesus tells us that our sin is forgiven, our guilt taken away, our pardon assured. He gives us a fresh start. He assures us of his presence to give us victories in the future. and God is faithful, totally trustworthy and reliable, and he will come to our help through every circumstance. There is never a time when he is offline, never a time when we're put on hold. He's never too busy, capricious, nor moody. He's always proved himself to be totally dependable and completely adequate in every experience in life. I remember a time when Carol was in a coma and went into an eclectic fit when our first daughter was born 2.5 months premature. The Lord saved both of them. And several years later, when we were driving to an appointment in the Alps, our car skidded on black ice and finished up wedged against a concrete post at the edge of a bridge over a mountain river. One of the rear wheels was hanging over the edge of the ravine. Carol and the girls clambered out as best they could, and I climbed over the gear lever to get out on the passenger side. And just then, a police minibus turned up and took the family on board while I went to a nearby garage to get towed away or towed to safety. The car wasn't a pretty sight, but none of us were hurt. It wasn't me who was in control, but God. Jesus shares our sufferings. He didn't lead a detached life, free from adversity, free from trouble. He experienced hardship firsthand, and he went through anguish that we will never have to face. We read that he was troubled in spirit when he was standing in front of Lazarus's tomb, even though he knew what he was going to do, raise him from the dead. He was troubled in spirit in the upper room when he announced that one of his disciples was going to betray him. And he was in great anguish in the garden as he prayed to his Father, "Not my will, but yours be done." And all of that before the excruciating agony of the cross, the abandonment of the Father, and all of that because he loves us. The help he offers isn't only comfort and empathy by saying, "I know what you're going through." No, it goes much further than that. He teaches us how we should respond to the different periods of trial and temptation that we all face through life. I can't but help remember the well-known poem, Footsteps. One night I dreamed a dream as I was walking along the beach with my Lord. Across the dark sky flashed scenes from my life. For each scene, I noticed two sets of footprints in the sand, one belonging to me and one to my Lord. After the last scene of my life, as it flashed before me, I looked back at the footprints in the sand and noticed that at many times along the path, especially at the times when I was at my lowest and saddest, there was only one set of footprints. And that really troubled me. So I asked the Lord about it. "Lord, you said once that I decided to follow you, you'd walk with me all the way. But I noticed that during the saddest and most troublesome times of my life, there was only one set of footprints. I don't understand why, when I needed you the most, you wouldn't be there." He whispered, "My precious child, I love you and will never leave you, never, ever, during your trials and testing. When you saw only one set of footprints, it was then that I was carrying you." He gives us his strength. I've already mentioned that Jesus is our high priest. In chapter 7 of this same letter, we learn that he has an indestructible life. All the powers of evil were thrown at him as he hung on the cross. But as we celebrated last Sunday, he rose to life again. He was raised by the almighty power of God. And when we feel that we're at the end of our tether, he comes to us, his children, in order to bring us to glory. In Grace Fellowship, we often sing a song by Keith Getty and Stuart Townend, "In Christ Alone." But I wonder whether we always think about these words in the last verse. "No power of hell, no scheme of man, can ever pluck me from his hand. till he returns or calls me home. Here in the power of Christ I'll stand. I'd just like to close with one last brief comment. We may be delivered from the fear of death, but we may face the inner turmoil of failing health, the loss of our faculties, the humiliation of senility and other illnesses usually associated with old age. R.C. Sproul, an American pastor, confessed this: "It's not death I'm afraid of, it's dying." But surely there is an answer to that too. Jesus took on the weak and vulnerable human nature that we all share. We're told that he himself suffered when he was tempted or tested, and that because of that he is able to help those who are being tempted. In other words, when we're tempted to despair, when we're tempted to wallow in self-pity or become bitter, we need to remember that Christ has promised to be there for us. He will come as only he knows how, because of his own agonizing experience and because he knows everything about us. We have his promise that he will give us whatever we need to endure to the end. King David experienced the truth of that fact when he wrote, "Even though I walk through the darkest valley, or the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." May the Lord give us the faith to trust him, the courage to follow him, knowing that he will certainly deliver us from the fear of death, and in the end, take us to be with him in glory. Amen.